Someone write on this new reel. Suzanne reports for the first time since the summer was over, 2 or 3 weeks ago, that Thursday when Rick went out to make hay with Marvin and Mrs. Guthrie. Channel 1 right, beginning of the Suzanne's report, this Saturday, the 2nd of October, 71. Saturday, the 2nd of October, 71. Suzanne reports this Saturday, Channel 1 right, this Saturday, the 2nd of October, 71. Channel 1 right on this new reel and beginning of Suzanne's report around noon on Saturday, wholly unexpected, the 2nd of October, 71. Her first visit out here, about 3 weeks, I guess, since she took Rick over to make hay with Miss Guthrie. Channel 1 right, beginning of Suzanne's report, this Saturday at noon, the 2nd of October, 71. Channel 1 right, beginning of Suzanne's report, this Saturday around noon, the 2nd of October, 71. Channel 1 right, beginning of Suzanne's report.
There's a jar in here. It might be your coffee. Is that it? I got the surfing one off of Clyde. We called last night. I guess he thought we forgot about it. He called up and said, well, I got it ready. Picked it up. I'm a side guy. I don't like talking to you in your office. You don't have a tape recorder anywhere in there.
In the office
you don't. And you know, it's really funny. Now, I don't know, you know, I can't tell when you have it on or off all the time. But when I'm in here, I have a sense that I'm on the tape. I think it's business. We're in the office or at the house. I feel like I never know whether I'm just talking to hear myself talk or what.
You notice that? You know, that's true. The talk I do at the office and at the house is shabby. I try not to do much after being out here.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be just kind of...
See, I'm geared to this thing. It may not be on, but it's always there.
Yeah,
see?
That's what
I'm geared to it. Isn't that curious?
I feel kind of at loose ends. It's taking a lot around sometimes. Actually, I came out to see Miss Mary today, but I thought I'd better check in first.
You haven't seen Miss Mary since Rick made hay?
No, that's why I thought Rick would. That was just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, he wrote that up.
That's, I do think it makes a difference, the tape, the organizing, and
Dr. Helster announced in our little discussion that he was not going to give anybody any direction, that if they came up with one, he'd help them on it. He wasn't going to tell us what to do.
He did.
Wow. So this other woman says, oh, that's great. I've been that route.
And
he came out of that.
That's what he said. He said, I'm not going to give you any direction. Once you find it, then we'll work on it together. And he says, but it's kind of up to you. He says, it's kind of hard when you've never done it before. I said, Dr. Allison, that's the understatement of the year. And I thought of Hopkins of all people.
Yes. He's sporting anyhow, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, I get the sense that he says he's going to do this annotated edition of Hopkins. So he starts out. This is funny because this is the kind of thing I do. He's got the Penguin edition, and I guess he's got several copies because he cut out each poem and pasted it on a sheet of typing paper. So he's got this whole thing, a stack of, you know, these nice, clean, beautiful sheets of virgin paper that he's going to start writing on. And he says what he's going to do is, you know, from his students' comments and his own study, you know. He says it wouldn't be as much fun teaching something you already knew everything about. He said that's why he thinks he likes Hopkins. So.
That's right. It loses its freshness.
Yeah. Robert. He says he could care less if he never taught Tennyson again. I think that's maybe some other. I think it was. Awesome.
Yeah. But where does that leave me with Emerson? Of course, I guess he might say I don't teach Emerson.
That could be. But I thought, well, between Hopkins and then the Puritans, I'm going to really be moving in abstract realms this quarter.
Yeah, that'll do something to you.
That offended the Miss Mary.
Yeah. I expect. Because it's really funny in that history class. He evidently knows what he's saying. Or, you know, thinks he's. But he came up with this thing yesterday that the Puritans had God as their standard. And the standard had absolutely no content. It was a valueless standard. Everybody sits there and looks at him. Says, you can't do that. You know, you have to, if you're going to have a standard, it's got to have some value. But anyway, he spent the whole hour trying to explain what he meant. Everybody walks out with these dumbfounded faces.
Yeah. Well, it sounds a little like the young preacher we got over here. First time he'd been out of the seminary, and he preached on the Holy Ghost. Holy Spirit, whatever you call it. Then the next, they just have it once a month over here. The next time I went over there, he still preached on the Holy Ghost. And you know, he had his first three sermons was on the Holy Ghost. He must have had, he said, and that's why he did it, you know, he had a good, sturdy background in the Holy Ghost up there.
Down there.
So you don't know what you're getting, or who you're getting.
Yeah. Suzanne said she made a great discovery the other day.
Oh, yeah. I told you, I was going to tell you. I found out, it's really funny, when I talk to my class, I can use Barbara's, the reports and all. I mean, I can see what I'm doing with them there when I'm trying to explain something to the students. Like, kind of for a writing assignment. I said that you can talk about people you know, and one of the best ways is to use something that happened, you know, that you saw happen, that you know, kind of goes along with what that person is like. And then I bashing Mrs. Thorne, it just kind of came into my mind, and I thought that Barbara goes through and she talks about, she says first of all that Bashy is a bright spirit, and then she gives that little picture of her coming down the hall with her mop and her bucket and peeking into their rooms and saying, well, looks like you made it this time, you know, getting their rooms straightened up before she showed up. And then later on she says Bashy and Mrs. Thorne were nobody's servants. And then there's that long incident with the car salesman who comes up and tells them in this very brusque tone to go find Barbara. And they didn't take much of that because nobody just came up and told them what to do because they weren't servants. And Barbara goes through this, what they did. They complained about the man to Mr. Tilk. They were very upset on Barbara's account and their own behalf. And Mr. Tilk goes over and talks to the poor man's boss. And the boss gets mad, gets down on the man, and the poor man, you know, he just kind of gets it from all different directions because Bashy and Mrs. Thornett weren't going to be talked to like servants. And the class can, you know, they can see that. If they have sort of an example, they, you know, they have a better idea of what's going on, I think.
But, you know, it's a queer thing, Suzanne. I didn't show Barbara how to do that. Yeah. I found out from her kind of how to do it. And, you know, you look in the books, in your books up there, your textbooks, and you won't find it. Because the people who put the books together don't know it either.
Well, I don't know. Some of the stuff in that C3 book comes pretty close to it. Now, they're just talking about writing and not talking. But that idea of letting people kind of speak for themselves, they say, you know, just present an incident. And I guess.
Yes. I don't know why that, yes, they have some pieces.
Yeah.
Lillian Smith.
Yeah, the Christmas one.
Yes. But I apparently don't ever, I never have had any luck with that. Wonder why.
I don't know. I'm just, this is the first time I've, you know, had them read those essays instead of the, like, on the mass media, and I'm hoping that they, you know, can see kind of in those a little clearer what's going on. But,
you remember McLeod's manuscript on fishing on Orange Lake?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it may be that. That they don't know enough about anything.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. I didn't know that they didn't know enough until I worked with McLeod.
Yeah, that would be a big thing. They, you know, just, they want to write about something, they just don't know about it.
Yeah.
Or they, it's like me, a lot of the things that I begin to see have so much in them, in my family and all, I realized that all these years I just hadn't been paying attention, so I just don't know enough of it to use it.
Yeah. Well, I learned part of that from Cookie. It's amazing how recent my information is after I've been in the profession, you know, so long. And he was broke. He didn't have a job. And he started his family at the late 50s. And for 2.5 years, you know,
mm-hmm.
he lived up there right next to his daddy and just grubbed the living out of the ground. I guess he'd go up over the mountain trading horses or something. And he knows that was stick and stone. But he saw it as an adult. And children just don't see. They see something, but they don't see out of themselves. and they still don't see in the university. But I don't think the professors know they don't see. Well, take me. I didn't.
Yeah, they expect stuff from the students without knowing how much they can expect. Or,
Well, that's, that's... I see some of that you can get from working with students. Up there, you don't have the... You don't have access to them. Mm.
I remember, who was it? And they said Barbara had been at Windmill Hill for a year and 3 days, only taken a short little vacation, away, time away from it, 10 days maybe. And this person said, what did she do a whole year in one place? And this, to me, her tape, she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah. But the person asked, what did she do? Wouldn't count that as a doing.
No.
It's kind of like, what parties did she go to? And what'd she do for entertainment?
Yeah, what monument?
It was just inconceivable that anyone would find that much to look at.
You see, when Faye took me on that trip to Europe, touched all the money. I didn't particularly care about it, but I went with Faye. And Barbara saw more at 20, 21, whatever she was, than Faye did at twice that.
That's right. I didn't see England. I was there, but I didn't see it.
Yeah.
And I was better than... No,
Faye did, and I did. I didn't say it either. All I did in England that trip is read Robinson Crusoe in the uncut version and found it extremely dull. One of the dullest books ever written.
Well, you know, I think about where you do something and don't see it, or you think you're seeing it and you're seeing one thing, and for Barbara, I guess, looks more like at the people, like Jane's mother, to me, is that little picture of them chasing that horse down in the cemetery, and their father showing up on the slot scene, the woman looking out the window, and this handsome man disappears, and the next day the story's all over the place. That, I guess, is that little picture to me. Be as much as, I don't know, some of the monuments, I guess. But I was thinking, when Doug's wife went to India with her parents, she came back with a lot of souvenirs, of course. But all she saw was, the dirt and filth and squalor and just the suffering. And I was thinking, if I ever went to India, what I would be... This is right, this is bad. But I would look for Kim in it, the Grand Trunk Highway, and just the color and the marketplaces. And I don't know whether that's just as wrong seeing as the other way. But
yeah.
I think maybe it's Barbara, she stopped looking for what was English and just started looking at what was there.
She didn't know Ratliff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it's almost as if she didn't. It's an inquiry. That is, she sees what I'd have to look for.
Yeah, it's not like she just deliberately
starts
out, like I would. It's just that she does it.
Let me tell you, she's dear to her mama. Don't you remember that little picture of her mama with the butterfly?
Yeah.
So that's Ratliff. No way.
Yeah, and the mother's reports of people at work. I mean.
Yeah. The mother looks. I report. And then she said in the tape, you know, that you remember when she told her mama that when she went off with the horses and stayed home, she came home every night with twins.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the circumstances.
They say that the family complained because ever since she'd been 12 years old, she'd spent all the time
16.
Spent all her time at the stables.
Yeah.
She'd never been at home. But she said, but it was better than that. Every evening I brought my whole day to them. And they listened.
You know, Suzanne, when she came, it's in my comments. She couldn't talk about a book. She could read them, but she couldn't talk about them. And I put down the first one she talked about. The first time she ever talked about one. And the first time she ever did it with any satisfaction was on the
Cetology
section over there. And she does it with skillfully.
And she wouldn't take something that Guy suggested. Or rather, you didn't suggest it, but she went off on her own.
Mm.
I know that was, I was so surprised at that particular choice.
Yeah. Well, I had the, the general interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And she applied it. She worked it out.
Yeah, works it in.
Yeah.
She told me.
Yeah.
She worked it out better than I realized was there. Way
yeah.
Yonder better.
Yeah. I remember you said so.
Now, what's this about your hamburger for breakfast?
I'm just hungry. When I left the house, it's about 9:30, I guess. About 10. So I thought, well, surely some place is open now, because I don't like eggs very much. So I thought, well, I'd get a hamburger. Every place I came to is either closed or it's real crowded. So I thought, well, I just drive on down to Orange Lake to the Trade Winds and get one in. So I walked in. She handed me the breakfast menu. And I said, can I get a hamburger? She said, yeah. Couldn't get lunch because they hadn't started fixing that. But all I wanted was the hamburger. So she finally, after about 20 minutes, it seemed like, and all the time I was just sitting there, I was dying. I was so hungry. She comes out with this hamburger and it's about that long. Because it's got.
You mean it's a big, thick one?
Yeah, well, see, the meat wasn't so thick. It's just that she had two real thick slices of tomato and lots of lettuce and pickle on it. And usually, you know, you get this little thin slip of lettuce and a little bit of tomato.
Yeah.
And get charged 10 cents extra, which couldn't even find the toothpick. And, you know, I kind of squished it down. I landed on the toothpick. But it was enormous. Anyway, so I ate that. Now I'm okay. Lots of Coke.
Suzanne said that she was going to, she could see that in order to have energy, she was going to have to eat regularly.
I didn't realize that Suzanne didn't have vigor. You see, that's how little we know about you.
Uh-huh.
Where did you get that? Where did you get to be so soft?
Well, I could say I inherited my mother's personality. I don't know. I just never had to do anything.
You see, when you see those things, you ought to tell me.
Well, I told you. I said I was lazy, which to me is the same thing as saying you don't have any vigor.
No, it's not really.
Well,
it's that vigor. It's the vigor. Uh, think of just a constant, you see. You need a constant 24-hour day.
Yeah, well.
You live it once you get.
Well, I tell myself how to do that.
You live it. But no breaks.
Oh, takes hamburgers.
No, I had to cut off out here, and it was getting richer by the day. I cut off out of here, but the summer wouldn't cut me off. It just held on to me. And
God keeps saying every day, "Well, now this is I'm wrapping the summer up."
When Frances was here, say sister, she listened to Miss Chitty a whole day. I talked with her a little bit. And one night here, we had it rough. That's when Rick was here.
Yeah. That was a great session.
And I remember, it was like everything they said was all like spurs I felt in me. I got going. And one was, you see, the world of Miss Chitty. It just tore me up. Just the idea of leaving it. It was such a remarkable world.
Yeah.
And picking up this little halfway thing up there on the campus. And it was. It was. And I haven't slept since I got back up there. It's so fragmented.
Well, you see, I can get into that very easily because, you know, I've done it all my life, and I just after the first week or so, I just I adjust back to that. But I expect if I'd been, I can really understand Miss Chitty. I guess of all the people I've heard, she's the best.
Yeah.
Talking or whatever.
She does what you said. You felt like if they would just go.
Yeah, that little extra bit, just see more details.
And she does it. There's a, I never quite saw that as clearly. You see, if Suzanne had been up to standard, I wouldn't have learned much. It's mostly from her lapses, see. And she does well in class because, and she didn't do well out here. Now, how do you account for it?
Well, you mean in your classes or just classes in
general?
Classes. There's not much to it. You know, you have a specific assignment that you do on a certain date, and you either get it done or you'll get a grade. And in the first place, the teacher has, in most cases, has absolutely no concern or anything. I mean, there's no personal contact, other than you might go in and ask him about something. But, you know, they've all got their kind of their other projects, and I always feel like I'm intruding if I go talk to an instructor. So there's nothing to it. It's just, I guess Hellstrom's class on the novel, that was about the loosest one I've been in. But even then, you had your paper due this week, and you read the opening paragraph or so to the class, and then that's how the talks would get started. And what I would do, I'd read the novel and usually find something in it that was kind of exciting, and so I could write about it. But to that extent, I try to figure out, well, what is going on? In the first place, in writing papers on novels, I've done it so often, and I've seen so many examples of good ones that I can just kind of go along with the examples, which is, unfortunately, I think that's what I need. And out here, you know, I was supposed to be handling the tape, so that I didn't know what it entailed. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't give myself a direction, which, to me, at the beginning of the summer, that was part of the whole point, at least in my mind, was for once in my life to do something on my own without having some teacher waiting there to hand me a grade. Now, I didn't particularly care whether it got to be an accepted thesis or not.
No,
I just wanted to, be able to do it on my own, you know, come up with my own ideas, and which I didn't do, and which I very seldom do.
And I don't know how I got this in my mind. I can't really catch it. But I got feeling somewhere the last part of the summer from watching you, working with you, that in class you don't have to fend for yourself. You're sitting there with you slip in there with a half a dozen others.
Oh yeah.
Or a dozen others.
Yeah.
And you're never exposed.
No, your paper is not given any more weight or attention or anything than your friend's papers. And besides that, you sit there and you talk about what you're doing with your friends, which, no matter whether you come to any conclusions from what you talk about, it's just simply, to me anyway, that this sense of, nobody's giving you any particular personal attention, which carries its own way.
Well, put it in the terms of the governess, you know, what I call the Freudian thing. You don't have to have a high degree of vigor to do well in class. Now, if you get out of class and working along with one or two people out here, you're exposed to pressures you don't feel in class. Now, you help me out if you can. Now, see, one thing you felt out here was that it was too steady. Well, you see, you can't measure against me because my muscles are so hard.
Yeah, well, I know that, but that's what happens. And I think Rick feels that, too. That we tend to measure ourselves against you because we don't have anybody else to measure against.
Yeah. Well, now that lets you, that leaves you open to sort of misgivings.
Slightly. And, well, that's what happens, you see. When I work out here, there's the personal contact that you don't get with a professor who's just going to read 30 papers. And that, it shouldn't be that way, but that's what happens. At least that's what happened with me. And not only that, but the sense that, I thought, well, I ought to be able to do something on my own, without having it.
Well, that in itself is a burden. If you start out with that, you're starting out with the same way the governess
did. Yeah, with regard to that, was the feeling that, well, she's got to live up to his idea, her.
Yeah.
And he probably could care less. I mean,
yeah.
As far as that goes, it's just I know I talked to Rick, and he says same thing. You realize you're doing it, but you're reacting rather than just working on something.
Yeah. It came out. I didn't know what to start with. It came out that
Rick came up here under a considerable load. He was not quite in the shape of the governess, but he wasn't far from it. Yeah. And you see, he didn't tell you, he couldn't tell you that. And, but I think those things are kind of neutralized when you work in a group. You're never really exposed.
No, like I say, you're kind of surrounded.
You're kind of surrounded, and you got people that you don't have to fend for yourself all the time. Now, but what I have seen is that even the graduate students up there can't still can't look at a living human being.
Well, they've never been asked to, for one thing. I mean, have that put up as being as much worse as looking at a novel. I've never had it. To look at Mrs. Chitty is as great a thing as to look at Jane Eyre. If not more so, because she's still alive.
Well, for one thing, you see, you can't see Miss Chitty. You don't have what I call the categories.
Well, that's another thing. See, this summer was the idea that I should kind of provide my own categories, which would take me into Barbara's tapes.
Yeah.
And I didn't have them, and I didn't know how to make them. I don't know whether this is just. I expect this is part of that vigor that I don't have, the ability to, you know, come up with an idea and work with it.
Well, you see, I talk as if I understand the situation. I don't. You see, I just...
I don't either. If you read that, you'll find out.
I just sort of probe. That's all I did. Now, you see, I didn't... And you got so you weren't direct with me. You'd always been direct. And you tell me offhand that you had to go to the movie with Jim. And I didn't know that you were giving me warning that the grind was too severe for you and for him. You see, if you put it in sharper terms.
Yeah, but they might not know at the time that that's what I was saying. I mean, I might not realize it.
You're not slow. You just got mousy, and left me on the air because I can't. I've always refused to do that pussycat reading. You know, I had a cat one time. It was a purebred, beautiful cat. One of the handsomest cats I ever saw. Esmeralda, she's called. And this fella, one of our friends up in Kentucky, gave me that cat. And you know, that cat tyrannized over me. That was a one-man cat. And that cat wouldn't have anything to do with Faye or any of her... I got the cat. I thought I wanted the cat so the cat could lie in there on the floor and the children could sort of put her tail. She wouldn't have anything to do with him. She took up with me. I'd come in there and sit down at my flat table, and she'd get up there. And I'd read, and she'd put her foot on the page, so I couldn't turn it. And she'd want to get in and out and things like that, you see. And I had to, she tyrannized over me the longest time. And I, since then, I have just refused to...
Pussycat.
That's one reason I always like nurses. You see, they work in the hospital and they're rough and they go ahead. They may not say much, but they're saying. And I think that is.
The guy would say, of all the children I've had, Suzanne is the one who's always been direct. She's always said straight, like, and say, you know.
Say,
well, Bert. Sometimes it's kind of hard to be direct when...
One day, Say Burke said to her, she's been constant, you see, for several months. And she said to Guy, you know, Guy, I've just got to go play with the little leaves. That's all there is to it. So she did.
Well, it's a long story. I would tell you, Suzanne, the only thing, the one thing that helps me that I can use, you see, are your little reports. You say that, you know, some of them I can use.
Mm-hmm.
I see your little reports started Nick. I didn't have, if it hadn't been for that, you see, he didn't have anything to go by.
Rick, yeah.
Rick. Now he made a series of reports there, and you can see him. And the very finest one was a report on haying, wasn't it, when you took him over there. That was no abstractions and a great deal of detail, but his relationships were clear.
Yeah.
You see, Marvin didn't press him. Well, of course, he had me in mind over here. I pressed him. But Marvin is gifted like that. He's just a prince.
Yeah.
He is just a prince, you know. He moved my cattle one time, and he spoiled me. Never forget it. Whenever I move cattle, I think of Marvin. So I could use those. That's what I showed to Hellstrom. I put them in a little, Xerox them. Put them in a little thing with a note on them, so he could see them. Well, he took them in the wrong way. He said, I think I can use these. I said, Ward, I'll be goddamn. I don't care whether you use them or not. I just want you to see.
Poor guy. And he said, you see, your papers made this possible. It worked on your papers.
Now those reports, those little reports like you have done and Rick did, those are the things that that enable me to survive professionally with my classes, with my colleagues, and with people like you that I work with on site. Now the tapes, you see, they can't use. Now you see, you tried to use the Barber tapes and you couldn't bring them to life, but now, you know, that's a little simpler than it sounds. You read a novel, and you can't bring that to life either. I can, but you can't. You see, I never use a novel or anything else in class and just talk about it.
Yeah.
You see, I get it out of the pages.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know where I learned that. I didn't learn it. You know, just a little at a time. Just a little at a time. But you see, now that's one of the things that you have to, you can do it, you see. But I think, I'm not sure, when you said you couldn't get into the tapes, I think that's what you really felt. But I'm not sure.
So this isn't just you, Suzanne.
No.
See, this is what happens to everybody.
It's like, just like Barbara, you see, getting into the, using a book. She couldn't talk about a book. Now, isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It's almost incredible, isn't it? Huh?
Yeah.
But now that's true. Do you think it's true?
I think so. Just...
I mean, do you see that Barbara could not talk about a book?
Well, no, not that, because you see all the parts where she tried to talk about books, you cut those out of the tapes until she hits the cytology.
I don't think I did.
Except for the one on the THY.
Now, you see, she tried to talk about, yes. Well, my recollection leaves me.
on that.
But she couldn't talk about a book. And at least she wouldn't. She couldn't even write about it. At least she couldn't write about it and give it to Guy. And after she left, I found these stacks of notes in there. And very laboriously, I put them together and wrote them out. She had scribble and scribble all over there. And they were very revealing and very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she couldn't get them together.
She couldn't get them together.
Uh-huh. And this last little mile of the discipline of putting it together wouldn't come through.
Yeah, well, you see, I could see things off and on through the tapes, but I didn't have any way of putting them together. I didn't feel like I could. I'll have to excuse me a minute.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. I'll see if I can find one of those copies today.
Yeah.
Pressure to do so is entirely for myself. It's kind of amazing.
Well, now how did he get, now when he came up here, he was out with his people's parents down there.
Yeah.
He didn't even know they'd let him come back.
I didn't know that day.
It was.
Yeah, bad.
That was his burden.
Oh, it was
bad. Yeah, I can see. It would be bad.
So you see, it wasn't me that made him feverish.
Yeah.
He came up here under that strain, like the governess. Now, with all your study, you see, you did the same thing this summer.
Yeah, I said someplace in there. I said, what was it? Oh. I can't remember. There's two versions of this, and neither one of them are too hot. Okay. I said, somewhere along the line, you remember the time and we tried to get Miss Daisy to talk about the... the other one?
Francis Persley.
Yeah, Francis Persley. And we came in here and talking about, you know, we said, they said you couldn't do it. And I, somewhere along the line, I got the impression you don't like people telling you they can't do something. I said, now where on earth, I came up with that after reading The Governess, where the whole thing is that if she just said, I can't, she would have been okay. So,
so what does meditation mean to you?
Yeah.
Well, in a way, what that is now, you talked about that, see, your last day out here with Rick, that Thursday, and it wasn't too clear. It's not exactly what happened to the governess, but it's variations of it.
Yeah.
Now, at that time, your mind wouldn't quite get it. You could see it better now?
Yeah, I could see it then. I think I can see it better now. I for one thing, Barbara, I couldn't stand her voice, you know, when I listen to the tapes, and I'd sit there and I'd just sit there, you know, and just grate on my nerves. Where I'd start out where I really enjoyed it, listening to it. After a while, every time I listen to it, I feel like it's kind of a martyrdom, and which is kind of like what happens to Flora. The governor, after a certain point, she just, you know, you have that switch, and because you just you gotta, you know, it was Barbara's fault. I was working on her tape.
It was her fault.
Poor girl, she only knew what misery she caused.
Well, now, see that, you know, this is kind of how it works out. You see, I've hit a wall many times. And it looks like I just have to start paring my nails and let the serious things go. But I've always found, you know, if you keep the pressure going, something opens. And I see at the end of the summer, cookies is out here. And you just stay along, we were talking a little bit. And it just occurred to me, you see, that everything that I had done out here had come to an end. Sort of inglorious end. But, you see, I knew this much, you see. It could be that I just had to have a new team. Now that opens it up. You see, for a long time, you see, Nick kept me going out here. I mean, I couldn't have done anything without him. I mean, really,
the truth. It was the tape, I mean, the mechanical.
Oh, yes, and he was also a groom of a fresh quality. He was, never had a groom like Nick. And then, On those tapes where we had mob scenes in the movies, they call them, you see, where we had a group, Cookie didn't know it, but he, maybe he did know it. He underwrote me. He had all of his family and all that commotion all the time, you see, like when Mr. Gilbert was over here. And it looked like a movie set. But you see how many balls you juggle at one time. Well, now that it's taken that to get some tapes, and also insights. All of it is not just tapes, you see. But you see, I can't hardly talk to warden them. They seem. So they don't seem to have muscles. They talk and they're perceptive and they're so intelligent. But you see, I keep this place going, and all the little groups I've worked up there, I manipulate them, and. You see, I'm like the governess all the time. I'm just at the point, you see, where I go a little farther, and I'm used to that. I've lived under that.
He chooses to.
Yeah.
For years
and
years.
If you can imagine.
I've lived under that. So. You know, these little student reactions, you see, to me, it's sort of like a puppy is biting you. I can't respond to it. I can't get it. You see, there's not enough muscle there to go on. Well, you see, what I'd like to do. I'd like to do some way. You see, I'm not interested in individuals so much. I've said that, and that always alienates them, antagonizes them. What I'm interested in is the public function, where the person who works along with me can get glimpses enough to where he can take hold and cut through and go out and fight the battles with Madeline Murray and, what's his name up in
Washington?
Nader.
And all the other activists.
Yes. I don't want anyone to live a tranquil life. I ain't got as much of a letdown, you see. It's just shabby. Just a shabby sort of thing. What I would give them is days and nights of discontent. And and even the professors, I can't talk to them.
They all want to retire, or they all want to as soon as they, you know, most professors don't like students, you know that. And as soon as they can get rid of them, they don't want to see them or think about them anymore.
Well, and so you see what you do with me, all you do is just sort of touch base and get what you can. It's all yours. I mean, it's free. Just hope you get it.
Well, as I say, I realized this whole summer hat wasn't just flub-a-dub with the tapes. You know, so much more that... Let me make one thing perfectly clear.
Well, you did something that no one else has ever done out here. You came out here. It used to disturb me greatly. You all come out here and set that damn picnic table. And that was the reason
I was... the country club.
And that was the reason I got so I couldn't stand to look at that damn colt. You see, it's like Hellstrom. He bought a horse from a fella, and all he got was a horse. Cookie had a horse. If he bought a horse from Cookie...
He would have got Cookie.
You see, so that's you didn't want me. I mean, I'm not authentic. I'm just so.
But nobody wants a Brook Farm.
No, but you see, but you did something that the others, no one else has done. You finally got away from here. You see, and you made contact with these people in terms that I couldn't reach them.
See, that was the glorious part of the summer season.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can see that.
And it's not just writing up the little conversations, but as Guy was saying, when you make these contacts, you've got to use them. Hmm. Just like you're now signing that you can use God.
Now, you see what your direction in the barber tapes is. You see, you've got to carry over the whole inquiry into the barber tapes.
Yes.
You see, that the thing of it is that she has made contact and that you have made contact. And unless you carry that over, the little trivial bits would be trivial. That's the whole thing. You've made contact with countryside. You finally looked at a living human being. You going over to see Miss?
Yeah, I think so.
Mr. Weaver came over here. Could have been Sunday. It was late.
It was.
And it was so sad. He came over here and just out and out lied. He said he just had that little cow on his mind. He just wanted to see how her foot was. But what he was looking for was to see what happened to Jimmy and that girl. He don't know your name.
So you saw another fox, huh? Yeah.
That was the afternoon that we were in town and we didn't get back.
And you know,
at 3 o'clock, and it was about 8:30 when he came over.
Yeah, you know, I was sort of envious. You see, nobody ever turned around to see what happened to me.
This week we would never make a trip over here. Yeah.
I don't know.
To see if I were a mile over there. But not Jimmy and the cow.
But you see, you still have those categories, or else you can't look at him. I don't know what yours are, but to me, you see, what brings him to life is that all the skills of the countryside. And
in the town.
Those things are so heady. It's so heady. It's such magnificent wine to him. It's heady. You see, and he's actually not responsible. And he's You see, he's a man with a message, a man with a mission, a man with an art, a man with a gift, a gift, a gift. A gift is what sends people around, you see. Like they'd been eating, drinking punch. It's the gifts. And he has had that great gift of those skills of the countryside. And you see, I looked through that little book that the man wrote with Alton on the Shropshire Lad. Now, Houseman was a member of the Cambridge when he did it. Classical scholar. The reason I got the book was to see if he knew anything about the Shropshire Lad, or how he was covered in the notes. Well, Leggett got through the book without ever bringing in any information about Shropshire Lad. And what he's interested in is the idea of mortality. And to start with, he sees that the lad is in the same shoes as a soldier. The soldier has that nice barracks life, but it's not long, you see, before he faces the musket. Now that's what he works out. In one passage, he said that Houseman, he quoted, he had one of Houseman's letters, and Houseman said, no, he wasn't from Shropshire, but from where he was lived, he could see the Shropshire hills, and they always appealed to his imagination. Well, now, in a way, you see, just it's a very pleasant message and a beautiful lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
But, you see, the Shropshire Lad, as I have seen him in Mr. Weaver, is nothing at all like that. And in a way, it's a sort of a travesty. Where he's writing about somebody he knows nothing about. Now there's your whole profession.
Imagination when it can be a real person.
It's a literary, it's entirely literary performance. But you see, I see all those great gifts from Mr. Weaver's.